final case of the morning is United States against Abdullah. Mr. Brodsky.
Good morning, Your Honor. Counsel, may it please this court. The most interesting point in this case, or the most interesting point in this entire case, is that after Mr. Abdullah, the defendant, was advised of his rights by the FBI, he invoked them. After they gave him his Miranda warnings in the police, in the FBI office in downtown Los Angeles, he immediately invoked his rights to silence and counsel. This leads to two questions. This fact leads to two questions. First, why wasn't he given his rights immediately upon his arrest? Two, why did the FBI wait until they took him until 45 minutes later until they took Mr. Abdullah to the FBI office in downtown Los Angeles to Mirandize him? The first question, why wasn't he given his rights immediately? The government answers in their brief, there was no reason to. They didn't intend to interrogate him. They didn't intend to question him. The response to that is, but they did question him. They asked him, do you know why you're being arrested?
But that's the ultimate question in this case, is the question, do you know why you're being arrested, custodial interrogation?
Well, he was in custody. So is it if it wasn't interrogation, it's obviously custodial. And the answer to that question is given to us by Inbao and Reed, the preeminent interrogation experts.
I think most likely one has to answer this question by reference to decisions of the Supreme Court. Professor Inbao is a very famous authority, but he has never exercised Article III power.
That's correct, except that
we should concentrate on Supreme Court decisions.
Well, the Supreme Court in Miranda versus Arizona.
We've had a lot of cases since Miranda defining what custodial interrogation is. Rhode Island against Innes, for example.
But we haven't had
one possibility.
But I don't think we've had a case that told us whether or not the know why question is in fact an interrogation. And we're dealing with the do you know why question. Is that an interrogation or is it not? And since the Supreme Court in the Miranda decision did rely on Professor Inbao and Reed in their decision and cited directly to their handbook, I think that they're very good authority on that issue.
So is it your position that any question that has any chance of eliciting an incriminating answer should be regarded as interrogation? What I'm getting at is it strikes me that we all agree that there are many answers he might have given to the do you know why question that would not at all have been incriminating. Everything from I don't know to I realize I'm being accused of certain things or a whole lot of things. It wouldn't have been a confession. There's the answer he gave, which is a confession. And so there was a percentage that it was going to elicit this.
Yeah.
And I guess there are a lot of questions that, depending on how the defendant answers them, might yield incriminating answers or might yield completely innocent answers. So as a matter of law, is it your view that, as a matter of fact, you could ask a question and somebody could just burst out with an incriminating answer, even if it didn't have much to do with the question. So is it your idea that any question other than, in a sense, name, rank, and serial number is potentially interrogation and thus under Miranda?
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but I do have to, you do have to take into account that the question, the type of question, there's certainly a sliding scale. You can ask the question, they could have asked the question, did you rob a bank?
That's not what they asked.
Well, I know, but suppose they asked that question, you also could get answers that are both incriminating and non-incriminating. So it's
objectively, the did you rob the bank question certainly sounds like an interrogation.
Well, like I said, there's a sliding scale. There's obviously, the what's your name question that's not going to get any, possibly could get an incriminating answer, but is almost very unlikely to do it, all the way to the did you rob a bank question, which is probably 99% going to be incriminating and 1% not. So there's certainly a sliding scale. I would say that the why you've been arrested question would be high on that scale, because the way their question is phrased, and the authorities describe it as a powerful interrogation question, putting the defendant in a defensive position, is the type of question that has a high degree of probability of getting that type of answer.
But let me ask you this. Suppose we agreed with you and we said, yeah, the first question, as he gets off the plane, basically, was custodial interrogation. Does that, as a matter of law, in your view, preclude the district court from making a finding that the confession was voluntary on the totality of the circumstances prior to the Miranda warnings? I mean, he over and over again says this. So, and one way one can read the district court's finding is, looking at the whole picture, this was a voluntary statement on his part, not something that he was compelled to answer.
Well, it would be hard to imagine that where the answer, I robbed the bank, everybody knows I robbed the bank, came almost immediately after the question, do you know why you've been arrested?
But what about the second time he says it, when he's in the room and we have Oregon against Elstad indicating that we don't have a fruit of the poisonous tree doctrine? Miranda, he's sitting there in the room and the government says the agents are sort of half outside the door, and he's saying, that's when he goes into his I'm a changed man because I've been in the Holy Land and I robbed the bank. And
yeah. Oh, certainly. First of all, I don't think that the Oregon versus Elstad case stands for the proposition that there is no fruit of the poisonous tree. In that case, there was a Miranda warning given, and then after Miranda warnings were given, sometime later there was a confession without, again, Mirandizing. And the question was the detained carry over? Was there a sufficient amount of time?
Well, it's a pre-Miranda admission and then a post-Miranda admission. So can you know...
In this case, as I said in the beginning, the very interesting point is that once he was Mirandized, that was it. He said, my rights, I'm standing on my rights, I'm not talking, I want a lawyer. So, and that kind of gets to the point that once he was advised of his rights, once he knew what his rights were, he invoked them. And I think also the case that was cited by the government, United States versus the Summa, notes that there is a split among the circuits about whether or not the fruit of the poisonous tree does in fact apply to Miranda confessions in violation of Miranda. And they cite to a case of United States versus Byram, B-Y-R-A-M, at 145 Fed Third 405, where the First Circuit held that it does in fact apply to the fruit of the poisonous tree doctrine does in fact apply to Miranda. So it's not a settled question. But getting to the whole point of this concept of the Butts case and what they found in the questioning outside Miranda, I think this case is a typical, atypical type of questioning outside Miranda technique. The FBI are very smart people. They have very top-notch attorneys. They do very little without a reason. I think they do almost nothing without a reason.
So this is a ploy to get that response?
I think it's a ploy where they hope to get an incriminating question outside Miranda. It's possible it doesn't work all the time, but I think that's their intention. They're trying to get an incriminating response.
Suppose their ploy is that they treat the person they arrest very nicely. And they, let him sit on a very comfy sofa, and they give him a good meal, and they hope that he'll just say something. Is that custodial interrogation?
No, absolutely not.
I don't then know why saying something is a ploy is the same thing as, therefore, it's custodial interrogation.
Well, I think that if you're saying the question, the type of question, you got to add into that. They gave him a nice meal and a comfy chair, and then said, by the way, you came in here. You know what this is all about, don't you? You know why you were arrested. I robbed that bank, but I think that making small talk, being nice, is more effective interrogation technique than to get then...
It is, of course, the opposite of what the Supreme Court was concerned about in Miranda.
Well, I think the Supreme Court was concerned about...
The idea of turning Miranda into a case where it's really attempting to crack down on police who are too nice on their suspects.
I don't think that can be made, but I think they were trying to balance the rights between very smart lawyers and experienced law enforcement and the average guy who has absolutely no contact with law enforcement or anything else, to try to kind of level the playing field, as it were, to let them know what his rights were. Mm-hmm. I think that's...
Thank you, Mr. Bradford.
Thank you.
Mr. Huff.
May it please the court, counsel. The question here is whether or not the question of do you know why you're being arrested is reasonably likely to elicit an incriminating response.
What possible reason could they have had for asking that since they had the warrant in their hand other than to seek an incriminating response?
The agents testified that the reason that they do that is to determine whether or not the arrestee knows why he's being arrested,
but
to determine why...
What do they care?
Circular.
They're arresting him. They know why they're arresting him, and if he says, why are you arresting me, then they produce the warrant, and they show that they have authority.
That is one way
they
to do it.
They want him to say something incriminating.
Well, they testified that that was not their...
But their subjective intent, the district court went off on this big thing about subjective intent, which I think is beside the point. This is not an area of law that's governed by subjective intent of the agent.
Subjective intent is definitely not dispositive, but I think it does instruct on whether objectively an agent would believe that that was reasonably likely to elicit an incriminating response. They had never gotten
particular people, but apparently there's a lot of literature. I just can't see why you would say, do you know why we're arresting you? Like 20 questions. I mean, it seems to me they're hoping he'll say, maybe at least, because you think I robbed the bank. And then all of a sudden, the fact that he's aware that there's a bank robbery involved as opposed to a drug crime or mail fraud or what have you, all of a sudden, you would try to introduce that evidence too, I suppose.
Well, I don't think that would be relevant in this case because I don't believe that the indictment was sealed, so it was a matter of public record anyway.
Oh, you would have been real interested to know if some random man getting off a Jerusalem to LAX flight focused in right away on a bank robbery. How many people sit around and read federal indictments?
Probably not very many, Your Honor.
You start to say what it
You can count the three of us out.
What did they testify that the reason was for their...
They testified that that was their way of determining whether the arrestee knew what was going on. They testified that they did not intend to get an incriminating
response. It's actually a pretty lame response because it's circular. I mean, if they'd had their thinking caps on, they would have said something like, it's our way of doing an identity check to make sure we haven't got the wrong man.
They could have said that, Your Honor.
But don't tell them that, or they'll say that the next time.
Right.
They testify how many times that they've gotten responses to that?
Agent Connolly testified that he's arrested fugitives, I believe it was 50 to 100 times, and had never gotten an incriminating response. Agent Moore testified that she had done it approximately 10 times and never had gotten an incriminating response. To address the issue of the authorities that say that this is a good interrogation technique, we're in a very different type of situation here. This was not a situation where they were going to have a prolonged interrogation, where it might be a good way to start off the interrogation.
They ask him a question that can elicit a response, and they give these foolish answers for why they did it. They also said that it would help assess his mood. I mean,
well,
I found that silly. Mood?
When you're dealing with... I guess I don't find it as...
They wanted to improve his mood, they would have given him chocolate.
It's not necessarily to improve his mood, but to determine what his mood is. If they're dealing with a dangerous person, a person who had been involved in an armed bank robbery, they may want to see how that guy is going to respond.
But they're going to see anyway. They're putting handcuffs on him while they're doing this.
I understand.
I don't understand why this advances the ball.
It's the way that they had done it for a long time. This court has recognized that there are questions that are standard booking-style questions.
And I don't see why this is a booking question at all. Definitely, the Supreme Court has said munis. You can ask somebody their, you know, they said name, rank, and city, their name, their date of birth, you know, all of this stuff. That's making sure you have the right person. Once you say, and by the way, what is it you did, which is more or less this question, all of a sudden you're in a different universe.
I don't believe that that is this question. This question was, do you know why you're being arrested? The answer is yes, I know why I'm being arrested, and I believe it was Agent Moore testified. What would have happened if he had given that response? Fine, he knows why he's being arrested, that's it. She wouldn't have followed up with any other questions. Or no, I don't know why I'm being arrested, and the agents testified they would tell the guy why he's being arrested then. He went beyond that. Just like this court's decision in Gutierrez, he went beyond the question that was asked and gave further information. And this court determined that when you provide additional information beyond what was actually asked, that's volunteered, and the government can introduce that. If there's no further questions, we would ask that this court affirm the decision of the district court.
Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.